Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Sid Garza-Hillman, author of Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto. And I also own a nutritional consultation and health coaching firm called Transitioning to Health. And I'm here doing my weekly interview series. And this week, I'm really excited because I am interviewing an author named Rich Roll. Rich, welcome.
How's it going?
I'm doing all right. I'm really happy to be able to talk to you today. And so in the interest of disclosure, Tyson reached out to you to see if you would be so kind as to put a blurb on the back of my book, and you did, and I really appreciate it. And I immediately went out and got the book and read it. My degree, before I became a nutritionist, my bachelor's degree is in philosophy. And so often I'll read things and kind of parse out the maybe some overarching themes. One of the things I wanted to ask you in your book, Finding Ultra, which is out now on Crown Archetype, and a super fun read and great. I mean, I literally couldn't put it down, which was really nice and refreshing. But one of the big messages, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you wanted to get across to readers is when you do like five Ironman distance races in 7 days, you should probably bring an extra bike or at least some extra parts.
That's the entire point of the book. If that
okay,
is your takeaway,
that's what I thought, and I was like, I haven't heard that in the write-ups, but that was what I saw.
Exactly.
You
nailed it.
Did I? Yeah, I did. It's so funny. Yeah, because I was like, well, the addiction stuff, like, that's interesting, but okay, here's the meat, right? He's on Hawaii,
right, exactly.
And we just spent three pages because he couldn't find a pedal. You know what? And so that was kind
exactly.
of, yeah. Yeah. But
actually,
it's
a recurring theme. It's a recurring.
Is
theme.
It okay?
If
so
I
that
only
was
had more parts.
That was
find
gonna be.
More parts.
Yeah, find more parts. So in all truthiness, as Stephen Colbert would say, my lead into that is to say, so obviously in reading the book, you know, in the way, and I do want to talk about the addiction, because in my practice, I frame. You know, people come to me and they want to become healthier and they want to live healthy. And I do look at things through the addiction filter, because the way that people, humans in the modern world, are attracted to food is in a way an addictive kind of habit. You know, we don't go to food for nutrition, you know, instinctually anymore. We go for taste, and it's kind of that pleasure center thing. And so when I was reading your book, I thought, so here's a guy who's overcome alcoholism and moved into this. How does addiction inform your life today? And have you just replaced alcohol addict with fitness addict, or what is the mechanism there in the way that alcohol, you know, your addiction fuels your life
right.
today?
No, it's a great question. I mean, I think that, you know, I definitely sort of perceive my world through a prism of addiction and recovery. You know, that kind of informs how I experience my life and how I kind of filter information, I suppose. And you know, I think that we are in a culture where there's a very black and white sort of perspective on addiction, like you're an addict or you're not an addict, or you're an alcoholic or you're not. And I think that, you know, certainly in the construct, the sort of narrow construct of drugs, you know, that may be the case, but I think there's a more expansive view that can be taken of addiction and our relationship as human beings with a number of things, from, you know, whether it be gambling to food to relationships to exercise to what have you. And, you know, addiction can be a spectrum in terms of the power behind the relationship between the human being and the thing that is the sort of repository of all that attention. And so when I, you know, kind of had this sort of health crisis and epiphany about my lifestyle and decided it was time to kind of change things up and change my diet, I really used the principles of recovery that helped me get sober and applied them to my relationship to food. And it was very revealing to discover, you know, how much of my eating habits were related to, you know, managing and repressing my emotional state, or, you know, just sort of the depths to which that relationship was addictive. And so, and it also helped me transition to a plant-based diet, because I have a very, you know, like sort of, you know, you're either drinking or you're not drinking, or using drugs or you're not, you're sober or you're using. And so, you know, plant-based diet sort of can conceptually made sense to me, and because I could draw a line in the sand and say, well, I'm not eating meat and I'm not eating dairy, and I can adhere to that rule. It's a very strict kind of black and white thing, and that kind of works with the way that my brain is wired. But to get to your question about, you know, sort of transferring one addiction to another, I mean, certainly, you know, I get that question a lot, and I think it would be disingenuous for me to just dismiss it outright and say, no, of course, that's not the case. You know, I have an addictive personality, and I have an obsessive state of mind. And, you know, endurance sports and ultra-endurance sports are a great outlet for that, certainly a healthier outlet than drugs or alcohol. So I think that, you know, I can go down that road, and it can become very covetous and addictive, and I have to work hard to maintain balance in my life. You know, I'm married, I have 4 kids, I've got a lot of different things that I'm working on, and, you know, if I start fantasizing about moving into a Ted Kaczynski cave and just training all the time, then I know that my emotional state of mind and my sobriety probably could use a little bit of work to right that ship. But I think that ultimately, endurance sports has made me a better human being. You know, it's just, but I do have to work to keep things sort of, you know, working harder and balance.
Right. Yeah, because obviously the book is Finding Ultra. I mean, you went, you know, your personality, you went all the way there. But in the terms of, you know, just on the spectrum, you know, your level of fitness and where you found it, but I think you've sort of not backtracked in maybe the quantity of work out that you do or the races, but I think you've found from what I get from the book is you found a really nice, you swung the pendulum the other way, then you sort of found this nice balance. Like you just said, like you could easily just become full-time and not do anything else. I have a family. I'm the same, you know, I'm kind of in that same boat with you. And so, but do you sort of have a one day at a time mentality? So my book, you know, like in my book, the way I work with people who aren't, I work with people who are definitely not ultra athletes, you know, people who are just sort of day to day kind of not professional athletes. And my message is sort of, you know, break down the steps into little things that you can do. Do you approach any part of your life in that way in terms of one day, I'm just going to get up today and I'm just going to do this thing today, or are you more long-term these days?
No, I definitely believe in and adhere to the one day at a time thing in many respects. And that doesn't mean that you don't have, you know, a goal that you've sort of established that's, you know, further down the calendar. But I try not to focus and project into the future too much and just try to stay in the present and deal with what's in front of me to do next. And the more that I do that, the smoother my life is and the better the outcomes in general. And I think that it's sort of a governing principle of living your life more faith-based and you know, being malleable and sort of, you know, kind of going with the flow, I suppose, as opposed to being, you know, stringent and saying, no, it has to be this way. Like, I try to not be reactive and kind of, you know, feel the energy out and make decisions, you know, in the circumstances in which I find myself.
So, and that sort of leads to my next question, which is another thing that struck me in the book is, you know, that the level of athleticism that you're living your life by. I mean, you're doing races, and you know, I read a book by Scott Jurek. I'm sure you've heard of him, Brendan Brazier. You know, guys I've been following for years, and there's definitely like a competitive fire there. But at the same time, what struck me in your book is when you decided to do the Epic Five, you did it in how I see it is almost in a competition with yourself, and that sort of is in a way that that I read with you in other races. In other words, I think it's Jason Lester was the guy's name that you ran the Epic Five with.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
And it was such a not run, but I mean bike and swim. But it was such a camaraderie picture versus even a race against him. It was so not about that. It was in other words, I see you as a sort of a competitor, but almost in an internal one, instead of a I'm going to beat you next time kind of thing. Is that something you can speak to?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I, you know, as an athlete, like, I like to win and I prefer to win, but I would say that it's not my driver. You know, my driver is internal. Like, I want to be able to perform to the best of my ability, and that's what motivates me. It's It's how do I bring the best out in myself? And if I can leave it all out on the race course and walk away and know I gave it absolutely everything I had, you know, throughout the training season and on the and during the race, then I'm satisfied. And the results are the results. And that doesn't mean it's not more fun to win than to not win, but it's really not about that for me. And when I kind of, you know, found myself going into competitive athletics in my 40s, it had nothing to do with racing or how fast, you know, what my time is or how fast could I go or could I qualify for Kona and beat these other guys. It was just I wanted to have a growth experience. You know, I wanted to see how I could, you know, expand myself through endurance sports. And that's still today what it's about for me.
So, which is really the way you started out. I want to get to the way you started out too, because it was I'm training for a half marathon, which I know you probably do before you wake
cool.
up every morning. It's sort of how the universe can speak to you sometimes. So I'm reading your book, which you worked with that trainer. I can't remember his name right now, but Christopher maybe, who made you slow down, right? And at the same time, I'm reading a book called Hansen Training Method, which I don't know if you are familiar with. With those guys, but their message in the beginning of the training, slow down, and, you know, and really run in that sort of zone two heart rate kind of thing. And I'm not going to get into the minutiae of, you know, heart rates and things like that. But what's interesting for me just personally is that I've run my whole life, but have always, each time I go for a run, I push, I go as hard as I can. It's sort of my instinct of go like, I got to make sure I hit this time, whatever random time that is in my brain that seems like that's what I've got to do. And so in reading your book and the Hansen book, I was like, okay, I'm going to explore this. And it was such a it was so difficult. I can't even tell you to slow down. And yeah. I mean, it was one of the hardest. I mean, not hard in the way that, you know, childbirth, but hard in the way of my own personality and going like, this is embarrassing. Like you said, you were embarrassed. People are passing you. That's how kind of how I was. And what do you think that is in us? Not you and me necessarily, but people in modern society. What is moving us to sort of set these kind of goals that are sometimes unrealistic and actually hinder? I mean, I was sort of hit a plateau with my running my whole life. That now I finally, after 25 years or 30 years of running, have gotten over by backtracking and starting and going slower.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a metaphor for what you're saying is it's kind of a metaphor for life, right? Where, you know, it's this principle under which we live where, you know, faster, quicker, instant gratification, you know, go big or go home. And, you know, we're inundated with billboards for, you know, Monster drink and Red Bull where, you know, push the limit and all the sort of these kind of the messaging that we're surrounded by and this kind of pervasive, you know, cultural, I don't know what you would call it, through line of, you know, push harder, you know, be macho or whatever, I suppose, kind of is an undercurrent for some of that. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think as human beings, where, you know, if you go out and you want to be a runner, you go out for a hard run and you want to feel like you got something out of it, you push yourself and you get a sense of pride and accomplishment from that. And you will reach a certain level of fitness. You'll just plateau, like you said. It sounds like you know, basically you plateaued through that method. And in sports, just like in life, you know, it takes discipline to step back and say, I'm going to do it a different way and I'm going to believe in this other way and it's going to require me to slow down and get, you know, out of my comfort zone and do something that I'm not sure about and not know what the result is. And, you know, I think that outside of the sort of analogy of running, not enough people do that. Like, we're just in this pattern where we live our lives the way we always have and, you know, we get up at a certain time and we go to the job and we go to Starbucks and we go to the movies on the weekend and the dinner party and you know, rinse and repeat. And sometimes you got to shake it up and do something different and get out of what you're used to and, you know, try on a different shirt. And even if you don't like it or, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know if I'm answering your question and I'm rambling, but.
Well, you are, but you know, you totally answered it. It's the slowing down thing. But what's fascinating to me and part of why, you know, why I'm just in my own practice and everything else is that it's like in the modern world today, we're, so in other words, slowing down to me, running, like you said, it's a metaphor, so it could really be any sort of concrete example, but slowing down is actually more in line with the natural inclination of my body. So, you know, we're,
right.
You know, you look at a Tarahumara, you know, out Red Born to Run, and I don't think they're going out trying to run, you know, 7 minute miles every time they go. That we've sort of disconnected, there's a disconnect that I'm trying to get to in this conversation, that we, in other words, I need to read your book before I can slow down. Where I think if we were living in nature, we would probably hit that sort of level ourselves and know to read our bodies in the way that is best for our bodies. And that's going to move me to my next question, because I mean, I've been 100% plant-based for over 10 years. My wife and three children are two, you know, and it is such a huge, it's easy to live this way, but it's a very big struggle in the way that I have to interact with people who literally think I'm torturing my kids, or, you know, such a, and you living the example of a plant-based culture athlete, you know, is such a powerful message too. But what is the disconnect? How do we reconnect? And I'm thinking, if we were living in nature again, the food we would eat would be nutritious, because there wouldn't be anything else other than nutritious food surrounding us in nature. How do we get that connection back?
How do we get it back?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the $64 question, is it not?
Right.
You know, I mean, there, I don't know that there is a simple, easy answer. And, you know, I've been asking myself this very question for quite some time. And, you know, my wife and I have talked about it a lot. And as a matter of fact, we just got back from Hawaii, where we were living for the last 3 months on the north shore of Kauai on an organic farm, like living in yurts and working in the fields and being part of a community, excuse me, a sustainable community of people that are, you know, producing food, you know, farm to plate. And that was an effort on my part and my wife's part to reclaim some of what, you know, what you're talking about. You know, how do we live closer to nature? And how can I give my children a different experience? How can I extract them from the iPad? How can I get them out of the mall? How can I, you know, teach them about food and nutrition and give them a connection to the land in a way that, you know, you don't get, you know, in our, the way that we live, the way that most people live. And, you know, in terms of somebody who's listening to the radio show, like, what can they do? Well, you know, you can shop from your local farmer's market. You can talk to the farmers. You can learn about their farms. You can visit their farms. You can, you know, I mean, there are plenty of things that you can do, but it requires you to shake your schedule up and it becomes incumbent upon you to seek it out, because it's not going to come to you. I mean, we're in a society where we're just kind of rigged to stay on the escalator and keep things the way that they always have been.
And I think even behind that, what's informing sort of the way that we can reconnect maybe is just a sense of awareness and a sense of mindfulness. You know, you have to start being engaged and thinking about things. And I wanted to ask you, what part day-to-day in sort of a formal meditation practice, or do you find your training to be active meditation, sort of what Brendan Brazier talked about, and being engaged, having your mind engaged in that way? Is that something that you do day to day?
Well, certainly my training, especially when I'm kind of doing that zone two aerobic training, is definitely an active meditation. It's sort of that like low grade level of effort. Works really well to kind of quiet my mind enough where I can get into that, you know, into that meditative headspace. But I also don't think that it's a replacement for a proper meditation practice itself. And so I do that as well as yoga as well. And I do, you know, a lot of journaling and a lot of creative exercises to, you know, kind of train my brain to, you know, think differently and release, you know, the sort of latent creative energy inside of myself. And you know, it takes work. Like you said, it's not going to happen naturally. It is incumbent upon us to take responsibility for, you know, our wellness, not just in a physical sense, but like you said, in a spiritual and mental sense and in a mindfulness sense. And,
you know, there are simple things that you can do to shift your awareness and your perception, and which over time I think will alter your priorities. But, you know, it takes discipline, just like it takes discipline to get up early and go for that run, or it takes discipline to slow down and do your training a little bit differently.
Awesome. We're about to wrap up. I just wanted to ask you what is next for Rich Roll. You've got the book, you've got the podcast. I listened to one yesterday, and I know that you're kind of streamlining that. What's coming? What are you doing? Are you training for a race? What's happening?
I kind of took a year off of training because of the book, and I'm just starting training again. I don't know what I'm going to race this year, but I'll find something. The paperback of Finding Ultra comes out this spring, so I'll probably, you know, kind of cruise around and do some press around that. I'm thinking about another book, but I'm not sure what that is yet, and some speaking engagements, and I don't know. That's about it, man. But before we wrap up, we're probably running out of time, but I did want to say that I love your book, and I think it's an important book, man, and I think, you know, food is kind of where everyone starts. Food is kind of the portal to everything else, and I think that you kind of pick up where a lot of these other books leave off and you know, take it to the next step with the mindfulness and the meditation and kind of, you know, all of the lifestyle stuff. And I think it's a great book, and I wish you only the success, and anything I can do to help get the word out about your book, I'm happy to do so.
I really, really appreciate that, especially coming from you. And I also want to tell you, I bought, when I, you know, found out, like I said, I bought the book, and my wife immediately grabbed it and read it. And she has never liked running, like, in her entire life. She's always exercised, yoga and other things, you know, but never, and now she is like running. She's running 4 to 5 days a week. She's absolutely loving it. I just want you to be clear that her grabbing the book and reading it super before I could even get my hands on it had literally nothing to do with the picture on the front. I just want you to see, just so we're sort of on the same page, like it had nothing to do with that.
All right. You got to love Photoshop.
Now, that was my next question. How much, Rich? Because nobody's listening to this. So how much was Photoshop?
Us girls, we don't tell secrets like that.
That's exactly right. Anyhow, so where do people find you? Richroll.com and where else? Anywhere?
Yeah, richroll.com, R-I-C-H-R-O-L-L. I'm on Twitter at Richroll, and the podcast, Rich Roll Podcast, on iTunes or, you know, Stitcher Radio or wherever you download podcasts, and we're having a lot of fun with that. And, those are pretty much the places you can check me out if you want to learn more. And I've got some products, some nutritional supplement products. You can check out Jai Lifestyle, J-A-I, lifestyle.com. That's my other website.
Very cool. All right. Well, Rich, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate it, and I will hopefully talk to you soon. This is Sid Garza-Hillman, author of Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto. You can find me on Twitter at Sid Garza-Hillman or on Facebook, Transitioning to Health, or at transitioningtohealth.net. I'm also the programs director at the Mendocino Center for Living Well, Wellness Center on the Mendocino Coast up here in Northern California. Thank you so much, Rich Roll, and we will come reconvene next week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Bye.
Mm-hmm.